Welcome to Crypto Talk Radio, the podcast for everyday investors like you. Visit us on the web at cryptotalkradio.net. And now, here's your host, Leister.
Thank you for that, Bailey, and welcome everybody out there on Crypto Talk Radio, found at cryptotalkradio.net. Liquidations coming down all around, similar to the rain falling in certain areas here in the United States, as many of these people who are gambling, rolling the dice, have lost. The house always wins. A lot of turmoil in the crypto space I'll be chatting about here in a moment. I don't have a lot of news bits other than, of course, Donald Trump is addressing Congress, expected to address some of the concerns around the tariffs and some of his actions that may have lent themselves to a lot of the uncertainty in the industry that's caused people to be a little bit skittish and nervous, and in some cases tanked. You know, NASDAQ, Dow, they all tanked as a result of uncertainty regarding fallback and flack from the things that Donald Trump's doing. So I want to be clear, because I did hear certain YouTubers directly blaming Trump for the crash, and I want to tell people, everything is cyclical, number one. Number two, everything is long play. Part of what Donald Trump has been trying to get people to do is understand that as long as we keep relying on China, the quality of our products and goods and services is going to continue to crap down, and he wants you to buy American. He understands, I think, that it's going to cost more, but you're expected to get greater quality for that extra money. And if we can get back to a world where there's more companies manufacturing and producing goods and services here in the United States, that can only lend itself to more jobs for people out there who need that work. And in theory, it should increase the money coming into your pocket. So a lot of the people, and again, I blame YouTubers that I hear talking about this garbage, a lot of people who keep blaming Donald Trump for not addressing the inflation are talking short term. They're trying to get you to freak out and FOMO in the short term, not understanding that the level of damage wrought by the Biden administration over many years has caused a situation where Trump can't fix it within a matter of weeks. The man just went into fucking office. So it's going to take a long time to undo the significant amount of damage wrought by the Biden administration. So people have to understand that short-term pain was always going to be expected no matter what he did. It didn't matter what he did. It was always going to be short-term destruction because he has to, you know, you have to rip the Band-Aid off. That's what he has to do. Your job as an American, is to simply consume American where you can, support American businesses, support American products and services. I know it's hard. I just dealt with a contractor in America, and they're as incompetent as they all get out. I just argued with a different one where I'm trying to tell them, look, if this was a China-based something, they knew what the heck they were doing. Products where it says, yeah, it's made in America, doop, 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 and they don't even bother putting an instruction manual in the fucking box, and they want you to scan a stupid code to see the instructions. This is what American companies don't understand, is if we're going to give you back that business, you better show up, because if you can't do what China is readily doing, you're going to lose the battle. So it's up to them to step up. I'm suggesting that you at least should give them a chance and stop shopping on Temu and all these other garbage places with garbage products that aren't worth a damn and adding waste to our landfills. You know who you are. Anyway, cryptocurrency was suffering. It continues to suffer, but it was suffering really bad. I'm going to talk about some of the dips that happened very recently and talk about, most importantly, I know it's long overdue and I'm sorry for the delay, but there was a lot to it, more than I expected. I'm going to dedicate the remainder of the episode to Lily, aka Lillian Finance, and Brad Beatty. I said I was going to talk about it. It's time to talk about it. There's a lot to it, but I was able to simplify it down. Let's go ahead and get into this. Coindesk.com, and we are going to zoom out to the month chart for Ethereum. And the reason I'm going to start with Ethereum is that Ethereum, it almost got, you know, I was cheering for Ethereum to get down into that 1900 range. I was cheering for Ethereum to dip as far as it could go. I wanted Ethereum to just crap completely. I wanted it to just go down as far as it could go, as fast as it could go. I did not want Ethereum to recover. I did not want Ethereum to rebound. And unfortunately, it started to rebound. And I was like, man, look, here's, because again, I want it to be a lower price because I want to buy a little bit more. And I think it's due for another dip down into the, at this point, the thousands range, you know, 1500 or something. I think it's due for it. But regardless of what I think, over the past 24 hours, a high at just shy of 2300, a low of just shy of roughly 2100. And then it suddenly dipped to almost hit 1999. Almost. It was quick. It was a quick rebound. And then it's right now, as I record this, still in a suffering mode. It's hovering about the 2200 mark. But it did rebound. It's just that it's not holding very well. And a lot of liquidation activities took place on both Ethereum, Bitcoin, as well as other tokens throughout cryptocurrency. We're all suffering as a result of that. Bitcoin, as an example, a low of just shy of $82,000, a high of just shy of $89,000, currently around the $88,000 mark. And Bitcoin also is in a pressure mode. It's pressure down. And I said, you know, of course, some of those YouTubers told you we're headed down to the 70s. Right now we're in the 80s, which is where Leister said we were likely to be from my perspective, give my credit. But because it's downward pressure, we might go a little bit lower. And I said I might not get it right on the 80, but I felt like we were not yet ready to hit the 70, which it seems that's the case. It seems like it doesn't want to hit the 70s. It seems like it wants to stay in the 80s. Of course, everybody who's smart understands that the 80s were cooler than the 70s. In any event, I was hoping that Ethereum would go even further down. I wanted Ethereum to hit, you know, like $1,500, $1,200. I know you think I'm crazy, but it's like, look, I wanted to stack more of it because I knew it was going to run up again. And I also knew that the price of Ethereum was going to give me a strong measure about the artificial pumping of the price of Bitcoin. Because I knew that the price of Bitcoin, it was fake. It was not real. Something that came to light and it told me that there's a lot of the inflation that we saw, and by inflation, I don't mean inflation that's negative. I mean, inflation in price pumping. A lot of the inflation in price that we saw was a lot of money flowing in on the long positions where people were essentially trying to push the price up for Bitcoin. But I didn't expect the price run that I expected a price run, but not as hot as it ran. And I said, we're due to get kind of cooling off. The cooling off came, but then it seemed to be a little bit more extreme than was expected because some people reported that we dodged a bullet because it looked like there was a billion in longs that was sitting out there that was about to get liquidated. And then a bunch of money came in and filled the gaps and saved that person. I think one person said there was one that was out there for $160 million of longs on Bitcoin, I believe it was. And it's like, if this had not rebounded where it did, that person would have got wrecked and we'd have gone down. That's where the 70s would have come in. So it seems like it's heavy volatility out there is the point. And people were speculating all of this long activity was the reason for a lot of the, you know, hotness of the run that we were seeing. It's just a sentiment shift of we're just going to keep going long on this and go in and go in and go in and go in. But because of some of the sell pressure that was happening, B, some of the downward because of the tariff, C, because of some of the shifts on the ETF side and so on, all these different things created a perfect storm that caused price disruption. All of that speculation, because I'm not watching it, but there's a lot going on right now. So I can't imagine there wouldn't have been some negative price impact because of everything that's going on. Everything that's going on is causing nervousness. The nervousness is because, unfortunately, all those different players and all those different entities, they're reacting to the short term and they're not thinking the long term. We know with what happened in the EU, in particular with MiCA regulation, we know that we're trying to head to a world of safety and more regulation. We know that's the case. We know that the tariffs are designed to do good. They're designed to field off drugs coming across the border and illegal immigration. We know that Donald Trump's trying to increase American jobs and American stability and be a strong producer. We know that Donald Trump yelling at Zelensky up in the Oval Office about the war and trying to end the war is a positive that he's pushing to do that. But you have certain impact players across the industry where what they're doing is they're trying to influence sentiment, your sentiment as well as bigger player sentiment, to tell them that it's a bad thing. That then causes them to depress the price. When the price is depressed, it gives them an opportunity to buy in on the cheap. I think that's a game. I think it's a game that's being played where they're trying to suppress the price, not because they really think it's bad, but because they're just trying to get in on a lower price point, knowing it's going to run up again. All theoretically, I have no evidence. I'm simply saying that I don't see anything happening worldwide or industry-wide that I would consider a strong negative anything. The thing that Trump did on Zelensky, somebody needed to do on Zelensky because he doesn't understand peace should be the number one, not your feelings. I understand what you feel. Peace should be the number one. And if you're not willing to play ball and side over here, then why should we be sending you billions and billions of dollars of aid? And you're not thankful of the billions and billions. You just want more and more and more. And it's a drain. And Trump's trying to say, no, we're going to cut the spigot off. In fact, they just did. They just cut the spigot off of aid. We're not sending any more aid unless Zelensky comes around. That we should be praising that. We should be celebrating it. But there are some large players that are trying to influence the market, quote unquote, to believe that it's a bad thing and Trump's destabilizing the world and all this other garbage. Meanwhile, you got Rocket Man up over there in North Korea shooting off rockets or starting to shoot off rockets again. Trump doesn't have time to waste on Zelensky, who's not playing ball. He no longer has the free handouts that he got under the Biden administration. It's a good thing to cut that off. It's also a good thing with some other news I saw around the IRS where the Senate was working to overturn a rule. Remember, I covered a little while back that the IRS was trying to implement a rule around brokers and change the definition of a broker. And then they were trying to inject themselves into decentralized. So instead of just the centralized exchanges having to collect taxes, that on the decentralized side, you know, ones like Uniswap, et cetera, were going to have to act like brokers. And they were going to have to report, you know, taxable income from crypto buys and sells. And I said, there's no way they're going to be able to pull this off. Allegedly, they were working to figure out blockchain technologies to basically intercept it at the blockchain level, every transaction, so that they could just circumvent the Uniswaps or whatever and then send people bills. Now, of course, they can't trace it back to you personally unless if you cashed out, because at that point they would see you at the bank side and the banks do have to report things like interest. So it seemed like the IRS was working to do an end run around it because they knew it wasn't sustainable. Well, the Senate voted to overturn this and they said, we're not going to do this. That's not going to work. And we're going to back and roll this back and we're not going to, this isn't sustainable. Nobody accepts that this is going to be a thing. Nobody believes that this is going to go forward and we're not going to allow it to go forward. And Biden tried to get it to go and we're going to cut that off at the pass. Some Democrats even said, there's no way we're going to support this. There's no way we're going to allow this. So this is great. This is excellent. And you should celebrate. That's why I say I didn't see anything in the recent news that I would consider overtly negative. Everything I see is actually positive in setting us for success with cryptocurrency, getting to the point of smarter regulations and not doing this, you know, onerous effort that they were doing in the Biden administration to basically just go after you and treat you like criminals. Everything Trump's tried to do has been designed to empower cryptocurrency to thrive and succeed because he knows it pads his pockets, right? Well, all the negative to me that was perceived or stated by various YouTube people, to me, I consider it positive. I consider it's a discount opportunity because you look at those people that are selling, I'm talking the real sells, that are selling out and you treat it to me as a discount opportunity because it's going to go back up. No matter what, it's going to go back up simply because after all the dust has settled and everybody's liquidated out, there's going to be a lot of buy. There's still buy pressure. El Salvador just said, we're still going to be buying. Screw all that. Screw you, bro. We're going to be buying. The ETFs are still thriving, still going hard. And they're trying to launch more ETFs and then other cryptocurrencies that are using Bitcoin as backing. No matter what, it's going to go right back up. So to me, if you are trying to get in or want to get in or thought about getting in, treat it as discount opportunities because that's how I perceive that they are. I don't perceive it as anything negative. I don't see anything dead or bad or anything otherwise. I think these are great things that you should look for opportunities. If you're not in, treat it as opportunity to get in and treat it as an opportunity for you to, you know, make some really good money along the way. And then make sure that you're taking profits, obviously. You know, don't get stuck in something because if you get stuck in something, who knows what might happen. Now, I'm going to round out the remainder of the episode here. That was about my half pitch. I'm going to round out the remainder of the episode with this nonsense of Lillian Finance and Brad Beatty. And it took me a while, and I apologize that it took me so long. I do have a compelling reason. That was because there was a lot of information to read. There's a lot. And he's a very slimy individual, more slimy than I thought was even possible. Arguably more slimy than Manny the Rug Puller and what he does. Slimier than Richard Hardy. Slimier than anybody I ever knew. And I suspect, I can only theorize, but I suspect it's just a money game with him. I don't know for sure, but I suspect it's a money game. The bottom line is, you know, when that Lillian garbage came out, a lot of people fell in, a lot of YouTubers fell in, Blees fell in, and some others, but a lot of YouTubers fell into the pitch. They fell into the messaging. They fell into what those people were saying. And I never understood, personally, I never understood what the deal was of why. Like, why? Why do you fall for this crap? Because I didn't see anything compelling with the project itself. Now, I did at one point speak in defense of one thing that people were saying that was not true about something that Brad had said. He didn't say what was stated as being said, and I just simply clarified that. Other than that, I didn't think anything much of the project itself, and I certainly didn't think it was going to go anywhere. I also knew that, you know, Del Rugpull, aka Del Crypto, was involved. And I'll talk about that in a second. So since he already had his hooks in it, I knew it was doomed to fail. I didn't expect that there was going to be anything with that business that was going to go anywhere. And I suspected, if not a rug pull, it was simply going to be a blatant failure. So let's talk about this business, Brad Beatty, and dig in here. Because as much as I'm disdained to do so, I committed doing so. And fortunately, I don't spend a lot of time. So for those that didn't know the background of Brad, he used to work at UPS. And I've got some funny hints and stories and things where I'm like, how do you know that? How do you know that? You know, I can tell you straight up. So the earliest I knew of the guy is 2013. That's the earliest that I knew about Brad. He came literally out of nowhere. So Brad came into the crypto space, literally, he didn't have a history in it that we could tell. He wasn't like in Bitcoin. He wasn't, as far as I can tell, anything. He was a nobody. That's the point. He comes out of nowhere and starts talking about this Lily Finance, but there's more to the story because Brad used to be a UPS driver. Straight up UPS driver, not a manager, not a lead, not just a straight up UPS driver. Brad was based out of Apopka, Florida. You're like, Apopka to do to? Yeah, Apopka, Florida. It's in the, I think it's close to, I know it's Orange County, but I think it's close to Orlando. But Apopka, Florida, it's a very smallish city in Florida. And he used to work at the UPS store number 5514. You're like, how do you know the deep? Once again, this is Leister, CryptoTalk.fm. So bottom line, he used to work at the UPS store 5514. That was the first time that I had seen anything about the dude. This is after the fact, but that's the first time I had seen anything about the dude. And he was telling a story about his kid daughter, Lily. And Lily was born with cystic ergoma. And apparently, this is what I was told later, but apparently the story around why he got into cryptocurrency was because he was having a hard time getting aid for her, and he decided to spin up a medical foundation using cryptocurrency designed to make it easier for other parents to get aid for their kids. That was the story being told. I'm saying that the first time that the announcement around Lily and what she was suffering and with and what he was dealing with was 2013 before that. So you're talking almost 10 years, not quite 10, but almost 10 years before that. So when Brad's on the road driving trucks, he meets somebody and partnered up with this person. He's telling the story, Brad. He's telling the story about his daughter. And Brad writes a book, gets the book published. I wasn't able to track down the book. Allegedly, he wrote two. I wasn't able to track those down, but he writes books about it. The book allegedly is called Saving Lillian Bay. and that's an adult book that's out there. I did a search for the Saving Lillian Bay book. I found a book called Saving Lillian Bay Miracles Happen, and it is spread out like Amazon. It didn't sell very much. It didn't look like it was promoted very heavily. The person that's written as the author is the guy who he was driving trucks with. His name's Ron. And Brad allegedly was, it's kind of like a ghostwrite type deal, where Ron, this other guy, agreed to write the book based on the story of what's going on. Well, some people chimed in and said, no, this is a ploy to raise money is all it is. You don't, to tell the story that you are struggling to is a scam because UPS gives you good insurance that would have covered the majority of your bills. You have Medicaid that covers you not. So people are making it seem as though the story that Brad is telling is not true, that you have enough with the insurance offered in the job. That's why the UPS driver part is important, because people made it seem as though with working at UPS, you would have had enough with Medicaid to get aid for your kid. Whether or not that's the truth, Brad's story was always that it wasn't that he couldn't afford it. It was that he couldn't find someone that was willing to do the care. Now, later, allegedly he was able to get that care. He just said it was very difficult for him to find it. Never that it was a money stretch. So then questions came up of, why are you doing the cryptocurrency then if it's not about the money and it's just about locating care or people willing to do the care? Brad at the time said, because it was a search. I had to hunt and search all over the world and all this other stuff. Nobody knew exactly what to believe, his point. But a lot of people came at him, even as far back as 2013, calling him a scammer, saying that the insurance that he would have had and the Medicaid and everything else would have been enough to get the care had he used it, and that the stories being told in the book, which I did not read on purpose because I didn't want it to bias my messaging, that the stories being told in the book were not true, or that you're misrepresenting it, or that you're using, again, all the narrative about your daughter in a way that's false, that you're not really telling the truth. Somebody else chimed in and said, you know, I have experience with a child with cancer. I understand how this works. And allegedly this person quoted is saying that Brad was saying that there were millions in bills as far as expenses, millions in bills that had to be taken. This person says that's a lie. Maybe that's what was billed to the insurer, but no, that's not what you paid. It's that you file for insurance. The insurer pays the vast majority. Then you do have some bills, but millions is an exaggeration of what it is. So this person makes it seem like you're stating something that's simply exaggerated. It's not really the truth based on the experience. And again, goes back to the insurance availability and the capability of you getting the aid if you wanted it through what UPS would have offered, and that what you're doing is misrepresenting the situation that you went through. The other book that he allegedly wrote was called Miracles Happen, as a children's version of the book. So check those out if you want to check those out. Again, I did not want it to skew my coverage because it's all essentially hearsay, right? But as far back, the salient point is that as far back as 2013, Brad Beatty was making claims, lofty claims, about the level of effort it took to find medical care. And then allegedly in this book, he's talking about the amount of money it took to get the care and the amount of money that he spent on care for her. And I do remember one meeting that he had on, I think it was X or something, later, where he was talking about how much it cost once he did find aid in order to get care for Lily. We would never verify or be able to verify any of what happened. Simply that experience is what spurred him, allegedly, according to him, spurred him to spin up what became Lily Finance. It's very important that you key in on the Lily Finance, because that was the initial phases of what it was. Early on, this is throughout 2021, late, the Lily Finance is then aligned with Saitama. Now, people didn't understand why there was an alignment. At first, Lily and Saitama were running lockstep. The expectation was that Lily and Finance were going to work together to launch this, you know, this token under Lily Finance, and it was going to be one of the first tokens on what eventually would be the CytoMask at the failed November 13th Vegas event. Russ would deny that he had any sort of association to Lilly Finance, and he would deny that any of the money went towards Lilly Finance. And as I covered on the Satama Scam Syndicate coverage that I did, go back and check that out. It's 5 hours of great coverage. There was evidence that A, the Saitama and Lillian created an LLC together, and Russ was on that with Brad. We also saw money movement that went towards Lilly to get it up, help get it off the ground. We also understood that Brad was in cahoots with Russ to launch on CytoMask. We knew that they were working together. November 12, 2021. So this press release was released literally the day before the failed November 13th Vegas event. The reason it was released the day before the failed event is because they were trying to do additional hype and pumps for that event, which of course did happen. There was unreasonable pumps based on what was stated about what Lilly Finance was going to do, which was this medical blockchain and all this technology that got people overly excited. Essentially, it was all smoke and mirrors. There was a Lillian Bay Foundation, all this other stuff, and that did exist, and I'll talk about that in a second. The point is that the products and services and everything didn't really exist. It was all smoke and mirrors, and unfortunately, many YouTubers, including Bleavs, were very confident that this was a real thing, and they were duped because there were people inside of that organization that were telling them that it was a legit something when it never really was. Well, as part of the announcement was made joint. The announcement was made by both Lilly and Saitama. Russ himself gave a quote on the press release, which completely contradicts his statement, saying he had nothing to do with it. Quote, picture a future in which you can pay for your recent hospital stay with your crypto earnings. This is what our partnership will bring. We look forward to integrating crypto into the medical space. This launch represents a huge moment in history. Stop. So that's a direct quote from Russ Armand. Now, here's why I laughed at it when I first read it. Bleavs had gotten called out on one of his lives about Lillian. And the person asked the question about, yeah, I can pay my medical bills with the, you know, with the token and all that other stuff with this medical blockchain, which is exactly what Russ said. And Bleavs said, no, that's not what it's about. What it's about is your records, your medical records, and it really doesn't have you to make payments. It's for medical records, medical blockchain security, etc. Bleavs was not incorrect, but the point is what the person was asking is directly quoted from what cult leader specifically stated on the press release would be the case, which is making payments, paying your medical bills with your crypto. That's exactly what they were selling it as, even though that's not what it was intended to be. What it was intended to be was misrepresented multiple times, because what it was represented in one avenue was it was around your medical records using blockchain technologies. What it was represented by these pumpers, everybody who was doing pump and dumps on you, was that you'll be able to pay your medical bills with your crypto. Now consider what was most likely going to cause a FOMO run. It was going to be the layman investor who's already dealing with medical bills, who knows how much it sucks to deal with medical bills and medical payments and medical loans and crapped credit. The idea that I could just simply use my crypto and make my medical bills go away in the next bull run, obviously that was going to cause FOMO runs. So they knew what they were doing and misrepresenting the intent of Lilly Finance. The point is that Bleavs was not incorrect in what he said, but the person who asked the question asked it because cult leader represented it that way, and Bleavs never knew it. So Bleavs was made to look like an idiot because you got the cult leader over here saying one thing. He's saying another thing. You're misrepresenting what the message is because there's not one single message. The reason there was not one single message is because they didn't have one. They were selling it any way that they could. They were telling YouTubers to sell it one way, and they told the cult leader to sell it another way. Then there's a falling out later, which we'll talk about. The failed November 13th Vegas event comes and goes. Apparently, Lilly Finance is not going to be available. It's not going to launch on CytoMask because CytoMask is a shit show and it's not ready to go. In December, Brad Beatty says, we got to move on. We got kids we need to save. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he said. We got kids that need our help. So we're going to go our own way and we're going to launch on Uniswap. So now they're planning to launch on the Uniswap side instead of trying to launch on the Cytomask, because the Cytomask is a shit show and it's not ready to go. Now, at the time, I distinctly remember they were talking about launching on the Uniswap side, and we're gearing up to get this ready to go. We're almost ready to go. We got everything we need. We're not going to have any problems on this one. I did some coverages during this time, various coverages at different points where I was talking about what was happening leading now. So now I'm hooking into the start of my coverage, which was February 2022. February 2022 is when they had not said, okay, we're ready to start getting on the Uniswap side and do a launch. February 11, 2022 is when they were scheduled to go live. This is when they had the catastrophic nightmare, if I recall correctly, the catastrophic nightmare where allegedly Dell rug pull is in front of it and it launches, has an immediate pump and dump. What I was told is that somehow he got access to the contract early, bought a whole bunch of tokens, dumped off of it, and it really never recovered. And many people said, you need to relaunch this because it's not fair. Because if he got in early, we're not getting fair prices. You should relaunch this stuff. And nobody listened to me and they let it roll. And I'm saying, this isn't going to work. You're going to have some major problems. Time. Now, this is the span of time when you saw the vast majority of coverage coming out of Bleez where he's just hitting it. I mean, just over and over again. There was a couple of other ones where Bleez was one of the worst offenders, where he was just talking about it over and over and over and over and over and over about these doctors. You know, this is what's going to do, and this is going to be medical. It's going to change the deal. And he was all in it, all in it. And that's because there was a guy, I think his name was Barney over there, that apparently he befriended and all this other stuff. And so he was listening to that Barney person, and allegedly the Barney person didn't know that it was a scam. Now, I could tell because you had Egghead, who I called him. I forgot what his name is, but the Egghead dude who was out there pumping and shilling off the side on X. This then led over to the announcement that was going to get on Coinbase. And I believe that was sometime in the latter part of 2022. I want to say October, late September, October, sometime in 2022, where they announced that they were going to get on Coinbase. And what they said was, no, we got all this. You know, here's the document, here's the proof, here's the email that we're going to get on Coinbase and we're ready to go. And then somebody posted, I think it was Egghead, it might have been somebody else, but somebody posted a thing which was supposed to be, okay, this is a copy of the email that we got with Coinbase where we're proving that, yes, we're getting on Coinbase. And Coinbase had chimed back in and said, no, this has nothing to do with us. And the Lily people were talking about, this is unacceptable, we need to talk right now because I just talked to your people and all this. And I talked about it. There's one of my coverages that talked about that. But bottom line, the email, alleged email that they have with Coinbase, the theory is that they got scammed. Lily got scammed, and it was a bunch of scammers that they were communicating with because it was this onboarding at Coinbase.com that Coinbase said didn't exist. It's not a real email. Somebody had asked Coinbase the question if this is a valid email and got told no. And I said, you didn't ask the right question. You need to ask if you're onboarding a crypto project, is it a valid email? Because it could be something on the back end. I'm not sure. Point is that they never did get on Coinbase. The date came and went, and then there was a crap out. And then November 2022 is when I covered it and said, I told you not to repeat the mistakes of Satama, because that's exactly what happened with Satama when they said they were getting on exchange and then they announced it to the world and it doesn't happen and it craps. And same with Terrarium, and they announced to the world it craps because none of them seemed to understand. And I said, the Lily people, you knew what was going on. You were there watching the Terrarium because you're associated with Satama. So you knew what the deal was. You can pretend like you didn't. The bottom line is you essentially ripped people off multiple times. You did it with the initial launch where you let Dell rug pull, aka Dell Crypto, rug pull the project. Now you're doing it again with a fake announcement about Coinbase, and the thing never recovered. Later, we would hear, I think it was even Bleez that said, you know, Barney acknowledged, okay, we probably got ripped off, and chances are we got cheated. We didn't maliciously try to take money from people. Chances are we just got scammed, but we were ashamed. I think they were ashamed to just openly admit that they got ripped off because they were telling people, no, we didn't. They were blocking people on Twitter. Like, it was a whole shit show with these numb nuts. It was terrible. They're just numb nuts. And after that, you know, it never recovered. It was toast. Later, when this whole indictment, the FBI, and they do their fake crypto next, whatever AI, they do their fake crypto and they do this sweep. Brad Beatty was swept up in this whole business. But before that, remember, Brad already had trouble. He was already up on fraud. He had the whole thing with the Eli Lilly deal, if you didn't know about that one. Essentially, what happened is when he launched it as Lilly Finance, Eli Lilly, which is a very big organization, had sued Brad Beatty and the Lilly and Finance LLC that was formed for infringement. They were infringing on their mark. Allegedly, I didn't know this, but allegedly on the Eli Lilly side, Eli Lilly was already doing products and services around medicines and pharmaceuticals and everything else. And that allegedly, they alleged that Brad took the logo for Lilly and the Lilly name when he spun up Lilly Finance, which is what spurred him to eventually change it to Lillian Finance when they were about to rebrand, and that never went anywhere. But he got sued over that, and then eventually they dealt with it. But the point is that he's been in trouble multiple times. He got in trouble early on, like I said, with the UPS situation where people calling him out in 2013, being a liar and a scammer. He got called out for being a fraudster multiple times, and then he got called out with the Eli Lilly situation multiple times. And then people even called out when they were about to announce the Coinbase thing. He was on a call with Lilly and had Lilly announce the Coinbase thing. And that was the cake on it, right? It's like you're putting your kid up there. You're using your kid to essentially pump and dump the project because we knew that it was fake. Once that all happened, it was all toast. But this guy, Blease, was loyal to a fault. And it didn't make any sense because most everybody else had already seen through these shysters long since. But he kept that loyalty just like he does with Ben Armstrong, right? He just kept that loyalty all the way through and wouldn't let it go. Summary of everything I just described. That's why there was a lot to it because I had to distill all the different moving parts and pieces to it. But the summary is that from the moment that Brad Beatty entered the industry, from what I can tell, that's about 2020, he was a scammer to begin with. He was already scamming because early on in the 2013 stories that were told, and I don't even know why he never went to prison for some of the stuff, but from the 2013 situation, from the book that was written, from some of the things that were stated, from some of the later cryptocurrency actions and activities and everything he was talking about and the later things he was doing where he was spinning up another, like it eventually came, you know, became a Ponzi scheme later because he was spinning up other companies later after this money that came from the Lilly and Finance fiasco. Everything that the guy did was scam. Everything the guy did was shady as all heck. I didn't even talk about, because it wasn't relevant for this conversation, I wasn't even talking about Egghead and all the stuff that he was doing off the side, because I felt like Egghead was more of a mark that he kind of believed his own hype, but really the fraudster here was Brad Beatty. Everything that he was doing was just scam, every single thing. And it all circled around his daughter. Like everything that he was doing was initiated using his daughter and using his daughter's story to push projects and make money off of it and then take off and do something else. It's the worst of the worst, especially because you think about Richard Hart, right? Richard Hart, we know what he's doing. Everybody knows what he's doing. The cops are going after him. The feds are going after him. Everybody's going after him. But it's not like he propped his sick kid up there to try to make the money. He just came across as a shady person that people are attracted to. With Brad, he put his sick kid up there to do all that stuff. And multiple people called it out at the time, Rodney being one of them. The point is, I was always appalled to see like Blease be so supportive of Lilly and Finance because I didn't see anything that warranted that support. I just didn't see it personally. So bottom line, the U.S. went after him. And as far as I know, continued to go after him. He was, you know, called up, but it seemed like they had less of a case against him, which is kind of weird. Because if you think about the things that he promised and promoted and talked about, it seemed like it should have been an open shut case, but for whatever reason, they were not able to nail him like they did like Cult Leader. And that's really bizarre. And it might have been that there wasn't enough money made to justify a case. Like it might have been so early because Lillian didn't have a lot of people dumped in it like Satama did. So it might have simply been that there just was not a lot of money to make it worth trying to chase after the dude versus a simple light sentence on it. If I find out more information about what happened, I'm happy to share it. But right now, as far as I could tell, there was no movement on the case other than a change of venue to Texas and a couple of changes of attorney. And other than that, I didn't see significant traction towards that case like I saw with the cult leader Satama. And I speculate that's because of a lack of money, that there just wasn't enough money to make it worth the while. But that's all speculation. I can't say for sure. Anyhow, Lillian Finance, we're finally done. We're finally finished with all of this crap, right? We're finished with the Satama Scam Syndicate. We're finished with the Terrarium Doctors, idiots. And then we're finished with the Lillian Finance scammers. I will not be, even though they're related, I'm not going to be talking about like Suzuki or Hoge or, you know, Mononoke or any of the other, you know, crap ones. I'm not going to talk about those. I'm done with the syndicate. I'm finished, finally. But what I will do, because I think it's valuable, what I will do is at some point I'm going to do a separate episode talking about the rebase tokens. All the rebase tokens that we experienced during that span of 2021 to 2022-ish, not in any specificity, but rather just kind of in general, the rise of rebases and how, what went wrong with the rebase tokens. And I talked about what went wrong with Libero specifically, but just in general, the rebase, all of the rebases and what went wrong with them and why, if they were smart about it, I'm trying not to swear, if they were smart about it, now would have been the time that a rebase token might actually thrive. And I'll be talking about that on an upcoming episode.